Raya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Dhargari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Dhargari Yashoda Nanna Vaja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanna Vaja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chavi Jamuna Tiravana Chavi Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Gopi Janna Balava Giri Dhargari Bhaja Janna Ranjana Yashoda Nanna Bhaja Janna Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jamuna Tiravana Chari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Krishna Balaram, Jaya Krishna Balaram. Nitya Go, Hari Go, Hari Go, Hari Go, Nitya Go, Hari Go.
Permanent to Pavatika Chaya, Akhtapati Pakapati Smata Zanke, Nishi Bhakavananta Swami, Shri Prabhupada Kija, Namaskar to Hari Rasa Pankos Kija, Vanta Go, Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Pavunachananda, Shri Advaita Gadadhara, Shri Vasa Digola Bhakta Nidhi Kija. All glories to some of the devotees. All glories to some of the devotees. Shri Krishna Harinam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Nice to see this many people after a hard day yesterday in the sun. And I'm glad to see we have some guests also. Today I was inspired to speak a little bit about the meaning of life. I was up in North Carolina for about a week and a half taking care of my elderly mother. And she got kind of bored, so we went to the little country club library. And there wasn't much there. And I scrounged around trying find something to actually to sketch, find like a painting book to sketch and paint. And I finally found one book on the bottom shelf way in the corner, and it said, The Meaning of Life. And I thought, wow, that sounds pretty far out. And it was actually by the magazine Life. Does that still exist? I don't know if it does or not. But it used to always have really far out photos in it, like one photo that was really, had some meaning to it. They would capture different things in life that were kind of deep and had a lot to say. And this was a compilation of all those, a whole bunch of those pictures. They were all black and white, and they were very heavy. Some were very happy, some were very sad, and some were old people, young people, all over the world, doing different things in life. And then along with the pictures, they had little captions, little paragraphs, that were answers to the question, what does life mean to you? And this was everywhere from persons like taxi cab drivers in New York to Einstein to scientists, mathematicians, poets, to all kinds of people. Harvey Cox, he had a really good one, if anyone who's very favorable to our movement. And many priests. And they had a lot to say. They had from anywhere that life is nothing, doesn't mean anything. It means to better ourselves, to better the world. And other people said that it means to love God by loving other people. Another one was, it means to have a good stiff drink. Another one was, actually, the meaning of life is that God got bored. So he just figure this all out, and here we are, and just go with the flow. So it was quite interesting. I actually almost wrote something in the back, my own little thing in the back of the book, but I thought they might trace me down. I was inspired to actually think that, you know, first of all, you have to know who you are. You actually have to know who you are, and then you can figure out what you're supposed to be doing and what life means. And many of these people actually have probably not slowed down enough in their life to think about really who they are. So some of them, and most of them, were quite shallow. But we're so lucky. We're actually very fortunate because we have the help of timeless, very deep and sacred Vedic literature that explains so much about who we are, what life is, and what we should be doing in this lifetime, the importance of it. So we should actually understand that in these Vedic literatures, it tells who we are. It actually says that we're not just have a taxi cab driver body. We're not actually this body at all. We're actually a spirit soul separate from the body. And that the real meaning of life is actually to please God. Since we're part of him, the part is meant to please the whole and thereby receive some reciprocation that makes you feel satisfied, that you're actually, you have some meaning in life, and it's worth living for. So we're very fortunate to have this literature, and we're very fortunate to have this Hare Krishna mantra, because that actually has both things right in there, both of those essential ingredients. Hare Krishna Rama, it means, oh Lord, oh energy of the Lord, please accept me. So it's saying that I am part of you, and please accept me back. And so the real meaning of life is somehow or other, we have to figure out how we're, in this lifetime, gonna get back to Krishna. And we find that it's actually not so difficult. Well, it's very difficult because there are so many distractions in this lifetime. And there's so many conditions. We say we're conditioned souls. But it means that there's been conditions laid down. Krishna has laid down the condition that we all have to suffer at some point. To some degree, we're all going to have to suffer. He's sent down the condition that we're very limited with our senses. We don't know everything. We have propensities to cheat. We have limitations of what we can understand, what we can actually participate in and do. So it's not as easy of a task as we should think. Therefore, we need a taskmaster, one who has actually mastered this feat, and that, of course, is the Supreme Lord and his representative, Srila Prabhupada, and the pure devotees that can help us to perform a task that will help us to understand really who we are and get a grip on this life. Otherwise, we let go and we're back here again next lifetime, just in that nice exhibit at the festival yesterday, showing the continual cycle of birth and death, which most people that I asked yesterday, I said, would you like to come back again? Oh, no thanks. I said, yeah, look over there, see what happened. No, I'm out of here. So we have to get a grip on life. We have to really understand what we have to work with. And the Bhagavad Gita explains, okay, what are our instruments for accomplishing this? And in the third chapter, Krishna says, the working senses are superior to dull matter. The mind is higher than the senses. The intelligence is higher than the mind. And he, the soul, is even higher than the intelligence. So we understand that we have this gross material body, which is made of senses, which is a good thing and a bad thing sometimes. But we do have this ability to use our senses. And then we have that driving instrument, which is the mind, which sometimes we wish we didn't have. And then we have the intelligence, which is a very special thing in human form of life. And if we strengthen it, it can help control the mind, and the mind can help control the senses. And then above the intelligence, of course, is the soul, which is kind of on the back burner, way behind there, in darkness, clouded over, and lost to most people. Therefore, most people are very content to have no meaning in life. They just go with the flow, and that's life is life, and you end up dying and coming back and living again. So the mind is in a very strategic position, because it has to drive us around here. And if we want to get out of here, we have to have a really good driver. We have to have some element that will help us get out. So I thought I'd talk a little bit about the mind today. Since we all have one. It's described as a subtle sense, like a subtle body, along with the intelligence and the false ego. I mean, my body is sitting here, you can see it, and it's gross, really gross. And then we have the subtle body, but I can't put it on the table for you to see. It's so subtle, but we know we have one. And I keep thinking, subtlety usually means very fine and lightweight. But I don't know about you, but don't sometimes feel like your mind is a very heavy thing on your shoulders, and you wish you could take it off and put it aside for a while. But the mind is in a very heavy position, when I think about the mind, I think of it like those mini storage houses. You know, they have all now. It's a new thing. You have so much stuff, you don't know what to do with it, so you have to rent these mini warehouses. They're all over the place now. And so it's very similar to the mind, because we have all kinds of storage departments. This subtle body can actually travel with us. It goes with us. After the body is gone, the body can't go. This thing is not going to go anywhere after it's dead. But the subtle body just travels with the soul to another body and to another body. And so it's got lots of compartments that are just full of
trash.
A lot of trash, yeah. Okay, the trash we call anarthas. So there's one compartment that's full of anarthas, lots of baskets and boxes, completely full of things that we don't like to think about. Right? And we have all kinds of bad habits. These are not as we wish we could get rid of them. And all kinds of things we really don't need. We don't need offenses in our mind. There's so many things that we wish we didn't have there. But somehow or other, they're stored in there for lifetimes. And then in another compartment, we have a seed bank. Thousands of varieties of seeds. Desire seeds. Every kind of desire you could think of, we've gone through. And we're still collecting, right? Still shopping for more desires. Every lifetime, our senses are spurring on more desires. And this is hard to get rid of, you know. Seeds, you can freeze them, but as soon as you thaw them out, they're ready to go, right? You put them in the ground and water them, they go to town. So they're sitting there. Many of them we're using. Many are just waiting to be used. And all of a sudden, sometimes, desires that you never had, you just melt, come to the surface, and they come again, right? Things you didn't think about for a long time, and all of a sudden you desire these things. So these seeds are just make you hanker and lament. So this is another whole storage compartment we have of these things. And then we have a lot of crates of karma. That is something that we kind of pick in, we go in, and we take a little bit out, we use it up. Some are very good things, and some are horrendous, frightening things, karma. And then we put some back in, and we can't seem to get rid of this karma. It's always hanging around, and it bothers us horribly to think of all the things that we have done that we're going to have to pay for sooner or later. So this is a great distraction, these crates of karma. And then there's stockpiles of memories, filing cabinets of photos, flashbacks, activities that we used to do, and they just pop up, right? You remember, oh yeah, I remember that. You see something, you hear something, it reminds you of things that you've done before, and sometimes it hurts, right? And you wish you hadn't done that. So these are like haunt us. They're like ghosts in the closet that come back again and again. So all these different storage compartments, they're actually our mindset. Or as we say consciousness. This is our consciousness. This is where I am at right now. And it can be a great distraction for one who is trying to advance spiritually. Actually, Krishna says that with this kind of a mindset, that it can be a stumbling block on your advancement in spiritual life. And then Arjuna says, I'm stuck with it. What do I do? And Krishna says, find some appropriate means to control it. Because if you don't control it, it's ascribed to things. The mind is your what or your what? Right. If it's not controlled, it's your worst enemy. And if it's controlled, hey, it works out real well. You've got a great companion to go along with. But most of the time we find that it's like Arjuna said, it's almost impossible to control this raging wind, this hurricane that goes through our minds all the time. But Krishna says by constant practice of the appropriate means, and then by detachment, actually having to pull yourself away from some things sometimes that you don't want to do. And then engaging in many, many as possible devotional practices. There's one prayer, it's Bhaja Hare Mana. It's always such a nice song to sing in it. And it's written by Govinda Das, and it says, O mind, just worship the lotus feet of the son of Nanda, which make one fearless. Having obtained this rare human birth, cross over the ocean of worldly existence through the association of saintly persons. And then it says, what assurance of real happiness is there in all one's wealth, youthfulness, sons, and family members? This life is tottering like a drop of water on a lotus petal. And therefore he advises, you should always serve and worship the divine feet of Lord Hari. So this is actually what we're trying to do here in Krishna consciousness, is get so busy in Krishna service and that these anarthas and these troubles go away. And that means that we have to have control of the mind through the intelligence. And therefore it's recommended to fill ourselves with all this intelligence, all this knowledge has been given to us by the great saints and sages of the past that have realized the conclusion of the Vedas, and that is to serve Krishna. So that's a lot to do. We have to constantly hear something spiritual. Otherwise, we're asking for trouble. It's described that the mind is Maya's workshop, right? And so Maya's there to engage us fully whenever we don't have something to do. But there's many people that say, it's too much trouble in this mind. I can't deal with it. You know, it's just too much. And so they rely on intoxication. I have a lot of experience watching some relatives that by the end of the day, they're just waiting till 5 o'clock. Can't wait. Get away from my mind. Take their daily intoxication. But what it does is that it doesn't make your mind a friend. It actually unleashes that enemy so that it makes you crazy. And what it does is it brings out all the demoniac qualities in you. Intoxication, Prabhupada said, we're already intoxicated. We don't need to put more on. We already don't know who we are and we're in amnesia. But to put intoxication on top of that, thinking that you're going to be free from that mental disturbance is the worst thing you can do. And what happens, the worst thing, is that you lose your ambition to take part in this most important human mission, and that is to make a meaningful life this lifetime. You lose ambition to do anything, but less to go forward in spiritual life. Your mind is lost. And so therefore we have to rely on our intelligence and the instructions to the mind and to the intelligence, fill it full of proper instructions on what to do in this lifetime to rid us of all intoxication, to find out that pure soul that is inside of us that is full of real pleasure. Because otherwise no one is really satisfied. This intoxication, you get more miserable. So it's very important that we realize the value of these books, and it gives directions on how to proceed spiritually. And it gives directions to have in this lifetime a maha cleanup. Now, when Mukya gets on the microphone about 3 times a year and says, okay, we're going to have a maha cleanup on Saturday, everyone come, our minds are thinking, oh, I'm sure I have something to do that morning, don't I? I'm sure there's something I had to do. You know, I'll go in there and sweat it out for 3-4 hours. Is it worth that pizza? I don't know, you know. So, but then you think, I need that. You know, the first thing I learned when I came to the temple is the more you clean Krishna's temple, the more you clean your heart. That's why I look forward to those maha cleanups, because I really need it. And it's worth it. I mean, after you go in the kitchen or the temple room, you've been in there, you're getting in the nitty-gritty corners and everything. And the next day you walk in, you go, you feel like, yeah, this is a place to be. There's nothing on the walls, nothing in those corners. All those things you've been seeing for months are gone. It's clean. And so that's what we have to do in this lifetime. We have to do a maha cleanup on our minds and our souls and on our hearts. And that doesn't mean just on Saturdays and Sundays or at Rath Yatra or at the Holy Name Festival. That means daily we have to keep this maha cleaning going on. So it requires some enthusiasm. It's a reformation that we all need. And therefore, Prabhupada made this institution where we're all together. And as you know, if you go in there by yourself and no one else shows up, you think, oh my God, look at that big kitchen. Why do we make such a big kitchen? You know, I like the little one, you know. And walls are bigger and harder. But then more devotees come and more devotees come, and before you know it, you're done in no time, right? So in ISKCON, we'll be done in no time if we all help each other clean up our consciousness. So Prabhupada really knew what he was doing in directing us out of this material world, out of this repetition of birth and death. And we can see what happens as we do this cleaning. What are the results? We go to our storage shed, our mind, and we see, oh, wow, all those anarthas, we took them to the landfill. You know, they're gone, they're out of here, you know. And we feel like, wow, that was... feels like there's a lot more room now, and we can fill it with other things, right? And what would you fill it with? Anybody have any idea? All kinds of nice things. So these anarthas we can get rid of, and then all the filing cabinets, instead of all those past memories, we can put in, boy, that Rath Yatra was a really good one, and that Daytona Rath Yatra was the best. And then that feast the other day, Rod asked me, everything was perfecto, right? And those, so all these memories, you know, even traveling in India, the pilgrimage there, and the trip there, and it just gets filled that way. And we can reflect on those things. The lucky second generation, that's all they have. You know, they don't have to worry about the other things. And so then there's the karma. We don't want to recycle any of that stuff. We want to get rid of it for good. And Krishna's so kind that he does. He says you can engage in devotional service, wiped out, clean slate, and then all we see is Krishna's mercy. Everything that happens, mercy. Thank you, Krishna. Thank you, thank you. And we become very satisfied. And we become very close to Krishna. And Krishna comes very close to us. And we feel his merciful hand helping us all the time instead of being brutalized by our past karma. So he's very, very kind in that regards. And then the Bhakti Lata Beach, that little creeper, plant that seed. And as soon as we do, we find that all kinds of nice creepers are growing. We have such a nice society. We have so many blossoming things. We're getting attachment to the holy name. We get attached to prasadam. So many nice things. And then all those desire seeds, gone. They dry up and they fly away, right? And pretty soon, they're all gone. And then we'll just have that intense desire just to increase our service, increase our way to please Krishna more. So this is the results we do see. Otherwise, we all wouldn't be sitting here coming again and again, year after year, to engage in devotional service. There's some other advice that Krishna gives. He says, just like Arjuna said, you know, it's more difficult than controlling the raging wind. So stay in a place where it's not so windy. You don't want to go down to Mexico right now to the hurricane, do you? Okay, so don't go where your senses are going to be agitated. You know, go where you can engage in devotional service and hear devotional things, hear transcendental things. If it's not nice, don't go there. You know, you're going to be agitated, don't go there. Detachment. Why cause more turmoil? We have enough of it already. Just like we might think, okay, I finally got rid of the kids, the husband's okay, everything. I'm going to go to the temple this morning for Mangal Aarti, and I'm going to sit down and chant my japa. Whole 2 hours of just japa, right? Quiet place. You sit down, and you're thinking, oh, just japa, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. All of a sudden, intruder comes in, your enemy, your mind, opens the door and goes, here I am. You thought you were going to get away from me, right? How rude. You know, here, you didn't even invite him to come, and he comes and just, you know, takes over. So it's even stormy, you know, in a quiet place. But if we have the intelligence and we pull out some of those nice flashcards about, oh, Krishna's activities, we're able to, oh, see, oh, Krishna, oh, yeah, that pastime, and then the mind will come back. It'll be reeled in. So we have such a wonderful process. It might not, you know, it might be a quiet place, but it might be stormy, but we can get it back to a calm place. And we can find that even in a kirtan where it's so noisy, our mind is so peaceful, right? It's almost easier to be peaceful in a loud kirtan with thousands of devotees at Rath Yatra. So the process is made specifically for us here, our inmates and friends here in the material world that are all conditioned. So we can get reconditioned by this lifetime engagement of hearing and chanting and engaging in devotional service. It's so important that we do find a meaning to our life. That means we have to very meaningfully take to this process. That means we have to take seriously the japa. We have to take seriously making the offerings nice for the Lord. Not something whimsical. Prabhupada didn't like things done whimsical. The more sincere, the more we realize. The more sincere we put into our activities, the more devotion, and then it always comes out better. Have you ever noticed if you go to like cook a feast and it's just like, oh God, I gotta cook, it doesn't come out very good. But if you're like, oh yeah, I can't wait, you know, really put everything into it, then it always comes out better. So this whole lifetime can come out better. If we really put meaning in this devotional service, this lifetime, And that means daily we should think about how we can make it more meaningful. The minute we wake up, we should realize, yes, the meaning of my life today is, how can I please the devotees more? How can I please Krishna more today with what I'm going to do? And then we can practically apply it, because Prabhupada has made such a nice regular program that we know what we're going to do, and we just have to apply it. Therefore, the mind is also controlled by this regulation. And then we can, every day, increase the sincerity. And then we'll realize that, actually, my mind does become much more peaceful, even in the most difficult circumstances. And it's not like Krishna just says, oh, now you're a devotee, okay, no more problems. No, that's not a fact. Sometimes even more problems than you ever thought are on your table. But we find that, no problem, I can handle it, because Krishna's going to help me. Srila Prabhupada's going to help me. And so therefore, prayer is also a very important thing too. This Hare Krishna mantra is a prayer, like I said in the beginning. Oh Lord, please engage me in your service. Please accept my service. You might not. Please, if we're begging constantly, 16 rounds a day, again and again, please, please, please. Yeah, surely, listen. Just like when your child says, please, 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 please. Okay, what do you want, you know? So at the same time, we have to, over and over again, okay, what do you want? And I only want to be in your service. Because this is our real position, and this is what's going to make our life meaningful. So maybe someone else has some things they'd like to add to that, or maybe have some questions or some additions how to make life more meaningful. Nothing? Okay, there's one. Do you know that they had a problem yesterday? They had two tires on the truck that carried the cart over, blew up at the same time at 6 o'clock in the morning in the dark. Tell me that's not a problem. So what did you do?
Yeah, we just think of Lord Jagannath, and he's my little daughter. She looked up in the sky and she saw the stars, and she's like, please star, help us fix Jagannath quickly.
So it was on time.
Even little Brinda, you know, she thinks, right. Okay, we have to pray to Krishna. Yeah.
Her intelligence already so big. Little teeny girl, hardly been in a body for very long. But just see the potency of the hearing and chanting and the preaching to the child. We have such an advantage. We have such a head start on this life, so far ahead of everybody else. That's why we should be so determined to go out and try to tell everyone, don't waste this human form of life. You know, while you're here at the beach, go to the Rath Yatra. I kept telling people, at least just go touch the rope. That's all. Just go touch the rope, will you? Get some brownie points in this lifetime. Somebody else? Yes?
Regarding the preaching, sometimes I get a little discouraged when you preach to, especially to your friends, and they kind of don't take you seriously, even though you're preaching to them for many years and giving them prasadam. Some of them listen, but some of them, they're really... couldn't care less. How do we approach those kind of people when that happened? Like, how do you change your approach? You just disregard.
Yeah, if that one didn't work, change it. You know, change it. They're just like when my mother, hopeless. You know, I don't even mention the philosophy. I just cook prasadam. You know, that's all I can do. And every once in a while, I might just say one little deep thing, you know, or something. But in general, yeah, you have to change your angle and befriend them, keep befriending them. And I think because usually without a meaning in life, you're not going to be satisfied. But if they see that you're satisfied with what you're doing, that you're really peaceful at heart and mind, they're going to someday go, wow, what are you actually doing, you know, what's going on? So, yeah, it's important. Yes.
Little Nanda. Actually, there's a nice story from Indrajuna Maharaj about his mother, that she was an atheist and he gave all kinds of Prabhupada's books to her and she never read the books. The books were just collecting dust in the garage, you know, for 27 years. And then eventually, at the end of her life, she completely changed.
Yeah. Don't give up your hope on your friends. Sometimes you can really pray for them that something, you know, Krishna will help them in some way. Sometimes that works, but I guess in the dream of Maharaj, his prayers must have finally worked. But yeah, and then you can see the potency of the books. So if they don't have any books, you might just leave one hanging around their apartment. Maybe they'll pick it up someday, just like Indrajumna Swami's mother picked it up. We have to be patient. Also, this process of dealing with the mind, sometimes it screams louder than we can even chant. But we have to be very patient and realize that Krishna does love us, and he's going to help us to overcome this. And if we want, we can ask Krishna to help other people too. But we should endeavor in our own way, whatever we can, to distribute this most merciful process of Krishna consciousness. It's really the only way, the only way, the only way. Yes, you have a question.
For Christmas, and she still hasn't opened it. So, but I was wondering if it's like in her house, would she still be able to?
Yes, Prabhupada described them as transcendental bombs, that they are so potent that they will sometime go off, but they have influence even just them sitting on the shelf.
Okay.
There's so many stories. I was on Sankirtan one time, and I went to, someone was putting stuff in a moving van, and I said, oh, you know, have you heard about our books? He says, I have one of your books. Here he is, putting boxes and boxes. The thing was almost all packed. And he goes, I got one of your books one time. I said, oh, yeah, yeah. He says, he went back in the back of the moving van, took out a book out of the box, underneath another box, said, see here, I still have it. I haven't read it yet, but I still have it. So if she has it someday, maybe she'll read it. I mean, I didn't try to give him any more books. I thought, well, someday he's probably going to read that book. You know, usually when you move, you throw out what you really don't need. But he still had that book. So, yeah, they'll become activated at some point. But they are acting now in a subtle way. There's a lot of stories like that. Lots.
I have to share this.
Okay.
I have a friend from Argentina. And, you know, I always like to ask devotees, how did he become a devotee? Because it's a whole, it's far out, you know, how Krishna, you know, takes people. But anyway, he used to have a game with his friends that, you know, whoever can throw themselves to the other side of the train when the train is going to pass through the train tracks. So they used to play that in Argentina, you know. And his whole family, so one day, you know, his girlfriend was telling him, please don't do it, I have a bad feeling, don't do it. So he said, no, I'll do it. Anyway, like when he did it, he told me that he actually felt that, you know, the wind of the train, it was so close to him that just like, he crossed the other line. I mean, he did like four flips, you know, really in the middle of the night. And when he landed, you know, his face landed in a Bhagavad Gita. You know, so anyway, but I mean, it was in the middle of the night, he didn't even know the book. He just said, oh my God, this helped my land in my face. I don't know. He just put it in his jacket, and then, you know, he just went home. And like a week later, you know, his mother was cleaning his room, and she found the book. And then she started reading the book, and she said, you know what, this book is really nice. You should read it. Where you found it? Now I found it in the street. He didn't tell her that, you know, what was it. But then, you know, now his whole family is devotees of Krishna. And, you know, the mother, she's a lawyer, and she's a big lawyer in Argentina. And, you know, he became a devotee. And the only thing he does is book distribution after that.
There's another one, too, about the two thieves that went into the house. And then they heard the owner coming home. And so they didn't have time to steal anything. And they just saw a book on the table, and they just said, well, I gotta take something. And they grabbed the book, and they became devotees after reading it. And then there's Kardama Muni told me the story. He was down and out, didn't have a job, and was staying in some girlfriend's home, you know, just sleeping there and bummed out on life. And the devotees, he had passed on the street day after day, you know, and forget that, you know. And then the girl that owned the apartment came up and felt sorry for him, and so she thought she'd be funny, and so she took a book from the devotees, and she came upstairs and said, "Here, this is what you need," threw it at him. And then he thought, well, and then he started reading. It was instructions of Prahlad Maharaj, and he became a devotee. This is all kinds of wonderful stories on the potency. Yes, Dhammaraj.
You must have remembered Parijanya Maharaj. He passed away a little while. He told me one time how he became a devotee. His son had his motel, so he was working there. And the devotees dropped the Bhagavad Gita there for, you know, like motel Gita program. Mm-hmm. So one night he was tired, and he decided to just open the book, and he read a couple pages. And he fell asleep with the book on his chest. And that night the thieves came in, and they stabbed him with a knife, but it happened to stab the Bhagavad Gita. So, and they ran out when he woke up. So after that, he said Krishna definitely protected him, and he became a devotee.
I know where that hotel is. I went to it. It's in a really bad section of town. So I believe.
Okay,
story.
So that's confirmed.
I believe the story. Okay, so we should try to make meaning life for as many people as we can, and distribute as many books as we can. Hare Krishna.